This is the Poetry Magazine podcast. I'm Don Scher, editor of Poetry Magazine.
I'm Christina Pugh, consulting editor.
And I'm Lindsay Garbett, managing editor. This week, Mary Ruffel speaks with us from Vermont.
I don't know where my poems come from. They come out of nowhere, so it's very hard to talk about.
The first four lines of Vapor Wake, which you're about to hear, came from an erasure text.
Since 1998, Ruffel's daily practice has included making one-page erasures. If there's a phrase she likes, she might use it in a poem.
I have a 19th century book on the table in front of me, and it is open to two facing pages. And I glance at the words. I do not read the pages. My eyes look at words as if the words were flowers in a field. And they actually kind of hover above the page for me because of how long I've been doing this.
Ruffel always uses obscure books from the 19th century, and each day she partially erases one page until the book is complete. She's completed 104 books, cover to cover.
If I can't find any phraseology that I like, I will just start erasing. Because I've learned that if I just start randomly erasing, I will see things that I didn't see when the page was whole.
Here's Mary Ruffel reading Vapor Wake.
Intelligence came on about 7 o'clock that evening, without any warning, for the first time in 2 or 3 months. I'd been crying. My eyes were Christmas bulbs. Love had dropped its honeydew and my mind was splattered, when suddenly I heard Edith Piaf singing in the next room and remembered that pretty souvenirs were manufactured after the war to be bought by soldiers who had greatly suffered. Pink rayon handkerchiefs with the flags of two countries embroidered there. Lo, I could leave these shores. I could sail home. I could take something with me. I could leave something in return. And at that word, it came back alive.
Sometimes there can be a very arresting first word in a poem, and the title is something that's obviously among the first words. So first of all, Vapor Wake is an extremely interesting phrase, and I think some titles you just sort of jump off into the text from. This one, Vapor Wake, is kind of intriguing. It's an intriguing phrase. It would be hard to know exactly where it's going to lead you as a reader. One thing that's nice about those two words together is that the V and the W form a kind of a wake. And there is something vaporous about this poem, the way meanings and images sort of float up at you and catch you in their wake. But the first word of the poem is intelligence. And I think even if you hadn't heard Mary Ruffel's introduction talking about these books that she gets things from, it's interesting to think that the word intelligence was once used to mean news, so that it's not just sort of like IQ as you might have measured in an IQ test, but intelligence means all different ways of knowing something. And it's sort of an interesting thing to contemplate. Intelligence came on about 7 o'clock that evening without any warning for the first time in 2 or 3 months. It really makes you, and that's not even the whole sentence. It continues after a dash. It says, I've been crying. So right away, there's a very complex constellation of things here. Intelligence, the time of day or evening, whether intelligence comes on with warning or without warning, what that means, and when it comes to you, and how that filters through your emotions if you happen to have been crying. And then it keeps going. My eyes were Christmas bulbs. It's actually weaving through a very long sentence. The whole poem is really a long sentence. I've said this before, but I'm always interested in that because that's something Yeats did very skillfully, is take you through a poem through one long meditative sentence. And so you are left in the wake of all the things that enter into the poem. And those things are quite interesting, and you know, we can talk about them. But I was intrigued from the get-go with this. I don't think we need to know much about the sources for this because it has a kind of emotional undercurrent that really is a driving force here, but it's not wearing that, the poem isn't wearing that on its sleeve.
Mm. That's so interesting what you just said about the different meanings of intelligence, because another thing that struck me about the poem, in addition to what you were just saying, Don, about how it sweeps you up in its wake imagistically and all of that in really surprising ways, is, you know, also the way that it creates a very coherent and buildable scene at the same time. And, you know, there's this sense of, like, where do you place this in time? There's the recording of Edith Piaf singing in the next room, the pretty souvenirs manufactured after the war to be bought by soldiers who had greatly suffered. And there's this almost this sense of almost mid-century scenography or sort of almost cinematography going on as well. And I'm really interested in that idea about intelligence as news, and intelligence being the news that comes on that maybe adds to the emotion of distress or crying. It's pretty intriguing in many, many ways, and even more so knowing, you know, how it was made.
Lindsay, I was wondering something, which is that Christina mentioned that it was hearing a recording of Edith Piaf in the other room, but I was sort of thinking that she was really in the other room and that the poem was sort of taking you off into this other time with the soldiers and the handkerchiefs and the flags. I don't know what you thought about that.
It is. I mean, it is a very transportive poem in that way. I wouldn't be surprised if it was actually Edith Piaf in the other room. When I first read it, I did think it was a recording, but yeah, that I see now that it doesn't actually specifically say a recording. So it could really be a transportation, as you said, to that time period. And it's fascinating. We've been talking about how this poem is just one sentence and it's just one stanza. And it also seems to take place in one room, kind of like one stanza would suggest. But this middle part of the poem between the M dashes does take us to multiple different places. So hearing Edith Piaf, whether she's in the room or just a recording, and then this thought about the war and the souvenirs, that part really stuck with me because there's such an incongruence between what these soldiers suffered and saw during the war and these merely pretty handkerchiefs that they got as souvenirs. You know, that something so small and insignificant could somehow be sort of something you could take with you that would seem commensurate to what you experienced or somehow redemptive or helpful as a piece of memory or a piece of thing that it seems for the speaker of this poem that just that thought of being able to take something with you or leave something in return is enough for the intelligence to come back on is such a strange connection that I wouldn't have made without the help of this poem. It is really masterfully composed in such a way that it's just these little things, these little clues along the poem that lead us to that realization, almost like the Edith Piaf and the Christmas bulbs are their own sort of souvenirs leading us through the poem.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, again, during that time period as well, people would have been listening to recordings of Edith Piaf, correct? Mm-hmm. In other words, you know, that sort of gramophone quality also could be part of, you know, the way that the scene is implicitly constructed. And I'm also interested, as you were talking about those souvenirs and how the speaker of the poem, the I, at the same time, seemingly on a certain level, realizing the kind of giddiness of these handkerchiefs and how that doesn't really resonate with what the soldiers have gone through and their suffering, at the same time, sees that as a kind of inspiration or model. I could leave these shores, I could sail home, I could take something with me, I could leave something in return. And so, you know, the idea that there is an inspiration happening or sort of a propelling into the future, maybe on the part of the speaker, or at least a hypothetical future that might also be part of that wake that's happening metonymically with those handkerchiefs. So that's kind of interesting, too, now that I think about it. When you think about in the past, you know, during this time period, how people would wave handkerchiefs when others were leaving on voyages and things like that. So you can kind of, I don't know, get the motion also, even though it's not stated outright, the mentioning of the handkerchiefs themselves might be the waving goodbye, you know, implicitly of the eye as well.
Well, it's interesting too that the poem does sort of fluctuate through time and bring us along with it in the poem, in the wake of the poem, because I was thinking about rayon, which sounds like such a modern invention, but actually it was invented in the 19th century. It was supposed to be kind of like an artificial silk substitute. Mm. And, you know, so that, again, is a word that we think we know, like intelligence. And then when you sort of think more about words that grab your attention, I mean, I think a lot of readers of poets, but certainly poets do this, if a word grabs them, you know, they're liable to look it up and sort of see what's going on with that word. You know, why is a word, you know, resonating with me? And rayon, you know, an artificial substance used to convey a kind of souvenir brought by soldiers who had greatly suffered. It's a very complex meditation on time, not to be like too cerebral about the poem, because I do think the poem sort of flutters nicely through your consciousness the way a rayon handkerchief with flags on it will. It's sort of something that grabs your attention. There's a bit of blurriness to it, but something inside you really gets the whole picture. Mary Ruffel's latest book is Dunce.
You can read Vapor Wake and two other poems by Ruffel in the May 2020 issue of Poetry Magazine or online at poetrymagazine.org.
If you're not yet a subscriber to the magazine, and you really should be one, for a limited time, we're offering podcast listeners a special rate of $20. That's $20 for a full year of the freshest voices in contemporary poetry featured in 11 book-length issues, as well as free digital access on our mobile app. Visit poetrymagazine.org/podcast offer to subscribe. That's poetrymagazine.org/podcast offer.
We'll have another episode for you next week, or you can get all May episodes all at once in the full-length podcast on SoundCloud. We're also now on Spotify.
Let us know what you thought of this program. Please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, or if you listen another way, email us at podcast@poetryfoundation.org. We'd love to hear your thoughts.
The Poetry Magazine podcast is produced by Rachel James.
The theme music comes from the Claudia Quintet. I'm Lindsay Garbutt.
I'm Christina Pugh.
And I'm Don Scher. Thanks for listening.